Welcome to episode 4 of Hot Air in 2018. My name is Greg Esser. Before I get rolling into it here, I'm going to start off changing it up a little bit by going through our sponsors. They make the Breeze mission possible. Very excited this year to have Papa John's Pizza on board. They have that Breeze 50 online order code in effect. Every time there's a Breeze win, you can head online and get 50% off your order with the code Breeze50. Also sponsoring the Breeze, excited to work with Spectrum Management, Port City Brewing Company, Oak Creek Ultimate Apparel, Murphy's Grill, American Ultimate Academy, Universe Point Cleats, and Cobalt CRM Solutions. New in 2018, we've got 3 nonprofit partners in the community, and very excited as well for Spirit of the Sport, the American Equity Invite, and ForestPlanet.org. I kind of butcher their name as I'm trying to recall it in my interview today with Austin Bartenstein. I butcher it good, but safe to say, ForestPlanet.org, their name is their website. Check it out. Each ticket sold in 2018, they're going to plant a tree, and that's exciting. The season has sprung, and the first game has already gone down. It was a loss, unfortunately, but only by 2 points, and I think there were a lot of positive takeaways. It's going to be a big theme in my interview today with Austin Bartenstein, kind of the things to take away, both negative and positive, out of that game. From my seat, spectating the game and putting on kind of my analyst hat, it was an interesting one. Things we know about Montreal. We know they abuse the breakside. We know they throw up big hammers. We know they complete those hammers. They did all of that. And if you can't stay close to your person in a person-to-person scheme in Ultimate, you know, Montreal is a very dangerous team. Even 3 steps onto breakside, and they're finding that hammer over the top, and they're throwing them for big gains. Breeze looked rusty and maybe not communicating on the same page entirely, particularly early in the game. There might have been 4 or 5 throwaways in the first half that were short field, not pressured, backfield turnovers, handler to handler, where there was a fake one way, a fake up line, a fake to the backfield. The intended target took one hard step and then retreated, and the throw went up anyhow. They weren't for big vertical gains. They were to move the disc horizontally, change the point of attack, and they hit the turf. And Montreal took advantage of those. They scored in 2 or 3 passes several times, and that's what really stung. Lloyd Blake, a guy that has only ever once before in a Breeze uniform had 4 turnovers in a game, and that was in the playoffs last year against Toronto, had 4 turnovers in this opening day. As soon as he rights that ship, he'll be back into his 2017 form, and I'm looking forward to him doing so. Some of the outstanding contributors, no one is surprised to see Rowan McDonald. 5 assists, 4 goals, 4 blocks. He touched the disc more than anyone else on the Breeze, 43 completions, and he wasn't really playing that backfield handler role. So these are completions that are coming for big 20, 30-yard downfield gains, if not scores, as evidenced by the 4 goals. I still think we're not even at the full effect of what we might see out of Rowan McDonald this year. It's going to be exciting to watch, but if he keeps putting numbers up like that, you know, this is outrageous to say this early in a season, but those are MVP-style contributions. Jeff Wodach had a killer game. He got 2 blocks of his own, 2 assists, and caught 4 goals. Delrico Johnson would not be outperformed on defense. He had 4 goals, throwing in, he had 4 blocks, throwing 2 goals in as well. Newcomer to the Breeze, exciting to see, also playing on that D-line primarily, Gabe Webster had a pair of Ds, while throwing 3 assists. So lots of exciting things about the Breeze there. A lot of exciting stats that came out of opening day. And looking forward to the next game. It'll be this weekend on the 22nd of April. It's a Sunday game, 1 o'clock. You know, the Saturday opening game, it was a little cold. It was at night. This is the family friendly. It's going to be a beautiful day. Bring out the kids. Catholic University will be exciting to see as the season goes forward. I've said it already. I'll say it again. I sit down with Austin Bartenstein on this episode. I'm very excited to have him, and I'm not going to delay it any further. Let's get rolling, and I'll pass it off to Broke Royals to play us in. This week on Hot Air, I am sitting down with Richmond Transplant, they call him the Hand Cannon, recently featured on Cut of the Week, Austin Bartenstein. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Greg. It's good to be here. And it's good to be famous from that Cut of the Week.
Or from the Hand Cannon. It's just so much fame. What happened on that Cut of the Week? You were featured, but featured maybe in not the way we typically like to be featured.
Yeah, I started running. I thought I had a pick six or something. I started running the complete opposite way of my offensive player. You should definitely check it out if you haven't already.
A lot of good content coming out by the AED. A lot of video every week. Yeah. And they're going to catch those moments too.
Exactly, yeah. So the last Cut of the Week I looked back at, and it's a guy who doesn't look as foolish as I do, but definitely being made to look like a fool. And I just wonder if that's going to be the Cut of the Week every week. It's just like, who looks the dumbest on defense?
It might not be about the cut at all. It's
oops, defender. I'm sure both of those are good cuts, but... So the real answer, I guess I know what I was doing. We had a flat mark and, I'm not going to give away the name of the defense we were doing, but we were really, focusing on no backfield. That was my job as the dump, is no allowing no backfield. And I really emphasized that job. So that's the real answer. I guess
you're really controlling the turf.
Exactly. He was not going back there. Yeah, so...
Okay, we can get off that topic. Yeah. But worth saying off the top, and good you've got a good sense of humor about it. The first, I guess, real question I want to ask you is, this year you're a second-year player on the Breeze. There were some notable departures in the offseason, yeah. But talk me through your year one experience, 2017, versus your year two experience, and particularly that preseason, early season experience.
So the biggest difference for me is that I'm in DC now. I was a Richmond transplant. I was kind of commuting up. So that is the nicest thing.
Which is about maybe 2 hours or so unfamiliar with that beautiful stretch of I-95.
Exactly. I got really used to it. I could do it in my sleep at the end, which I wouldn't do, but...
not recommended.
Yeah. But it's really nice to not have to drive 2 hours before every practice and be able to bike to practices. But in terms of training, everything felt pretty much the same. I did the Ultimate Athlete Project in the 2016-2017 offseason.
For those that are maybe less initiated, what's that entail?
So that's run by a woman named Melissa Whitmer, who started that, I think she started in 2011. I did it way back when it first started, so I'm an OG UAPer. And then when I moved to Taiwan, I stopped doing it for a bit and then picked it back up. But it's great. I mean, it's an ultimate specific training program, and it's put together really well.
Lots of single leg stuff.
Lots of single leg stuff. Yeah, and there's six different off season phases. There's three preseason, three in season, and then there's even a postseason kind of like take care of your body phase. But she does a great job with it. She's really good about answering questions to players. It's kind of like having your own trainer, because I think she has a staff now that like a part-time staff that will answer questions too.
Cool.
So I've been really happy with it.
One of your keys to success for the Breeze seasons.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I definitely felt stronger in 2017 than I'd ever felt on the field physically. And I think the biggest difference was not feeling sore, especially at tournaments, like 2-day tournaments. But even after AUDL games, at 28, I didn't feel sore. And I was like, how do I feel way better after games than I did when I was 24? So that's a huge difference, is just feeling like I could play like 4 or 5 days a week, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Without too much rest. So... So that's the training. Training was basically the same. I guess the team looks a lot different this year. There's a lot younger guys than we had last year.
So how does that change your outlook?
How does that change my outlook? I guess I felt pretty confident going to tryouts this season. And I think most of the second years and the long-time veterans felt like everyone would have kind of a more magnified role this year.
Yeah.
And that's definitely been true for me too. I think I have the same role as I did last year as a defensive handler, kind of like run the offense a little bit on the turn. But it's just magnified a little bit more because we have some newer guys who don't know our offense yet. And so, yeah, I think physical preparation was the same. And I think that's probably true for a lot of guys. It's like the team prep felt very similar. Like tryouts were hosted in the same way.
Yeah.
But, there was definitely less time. Like we had practices that we had like two practices before that Montreal game.
Yeah. I mean, that's always tough. And especially this year, it's been kind of an erratic weather year in DC. So some of those practices maybe haven't been either fallen off the calendar or weren't as crisp as they could have been because of the wind or snow.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. We had one practice that was, I think, 30 or 40 mile per hour wind. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Well, so what does that mean, though? You say you've had this magnified role as a D-line handler. Does that mean you're serving more in a mentorship capacity to some of the other guys?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think last year I was learning a lot from the other D guys about how our offense would run on the turn and our different marking sets and all that stuff. But this year I'm just kind of passing that all along to these younger guys. And I'm definitely, I think Rico and I are both getting looked to a lot as kind of the defensive leaders to, you know, have defenses ready when we're about to pull because, you know, the ADL is quick. In between points, only 60 seconds, and I think I have that right. It's definitely quick.
It might be less, yeah.
It might be less, yeah. It feels like less when you're out there. But, so we're both getting looked to a lot to you know all those defensive sets and be able to pass them on to the new guys.
So you'd mentioned a couple practices before Montreal, but maybe not as many as you liked, or would have liked, rather. Walk me through that opening game. It was a tough loss. It was a loss by 24-22, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Walk me through some more of what happened that day and what your takeaways are from that game, either positive or negative.
I think so. Takeaways are kind of negative to positive. So I'll go into that. So I think for me personally, it felt a little frantic that game. And I think the team as a whole probably didn't feel as prepared as we would have wanted to. It was, like you said, we only had two practices. One of them was really windy, so it was kind of a wash. And the mental prep, I think, as a team, you know, we didn't have all of our defensive matchups set completely like we usually do. And so I think overall it just felt less prepared than we normally do. And I don't remember that feeling from any game last year, even the first game. That first Toronto game that we were just kind of hitting on all cylinders.
Yeah.
But
that's surprising, especially considering you've got a year of experience under your belt. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think everyone would say they felt physically prepared. Like I don't think there was an athletic advantage that Montreal had, but they came out with so much energy. And I think they're often overlooked as a team in the East, like
they should be. They made the playoffs last
year.
They're a great team. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think like New York is always hyped as having a lot of like, a lot of like young kind of great college players that played in college nationals or whatever. So everyone thinks they're going to be awesome and they, you know, they'll probably be very good this year, but Montreal just has, they're kind of doing their own thing up in French Canada.
Yeah. They're recruiting internationally.
And I think they're having fun with it and they're fine with their 1,000-plus fans coming every game.
Like,
you know what? If you guys don't care about us, we'll just drop hammers on your D all day. So I think, you know, not preparing for them as much as we should have, they really turned it on in an away game. And you have to prepare for a team like that, especially who opens up the defense like they do.
So maybe you're hinting at a positive there, which is, was this a kick in the butt?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and that's what I'm getting at with the negative to positive. Like, the first quarter was definitely a negative experience for our team, but I think it turned into a positive thing because, like, the last three quarters, I think we were even maybe second and third quarter, and then we had a lot more points than they did in the fourth quarter. But I think more important than, like, the points as a measurement was just how the team felt. We just felt, like, more gelled, and I think there's something to be said for not having that team chemistry, which I think showed to the fans in that first quarter. They were just like doinks and miscues. But I felt like we really got it together. Like, the offense was really clean in the last three quarters, and the defense turned it up, especially in the fourth quarter. So I think it was a kick in the butt, and it's definitely been, like, the team talk on our Slack has been, has just been like, let's throw every day. Let's play mini every day. Let's condition together. Like, there's been a lot of outside stuff going on at practice, or outside of practice, that has been very positive. And like you said, a kick in the butt.
Re-engaging everybody.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Nice. So all that said, and it sounds like this is the mentality, but I'll confirm it with a question. Is there extra pressure on the Ottawa game this weekend because of an opening loss to Montreal?
Yeah, there is. And I think, like, pressure can be seen as a negative thing sometimes, but I think because of this kick in the butt, I think that's a positive way to say it, that kick in the butt comes with pressure. I think it does feel like a must-win game, but, it kind of feels like the Philadelphia loss last year.
Okay.
Like, that was... not to take anything away from Philadelphia, but that felt like a kind of a mismanaged game by everybody, not just the leadership, not just each individual player. Just like as a whole, it didn't feel like, I guess that would feel like the closest parallel from last season to this season.
Yeah, you just didn't feel like the team, the DC Breeze, fully reached their potential in it.
Yeah, we never did. Yeah, and I think it's kind of good to have this kick in the butt early in the season rather than when we had it in Philadelphia and there was less we could do for the rest of the season to kind of control our own destiny.
Yeah.
I think once we lost that game, it was out of our hands again and it was in Toronto's hands.
Right.
0-1 is just, anything can happen
early.
From there.
Yeah. Lots of games to play.
Although
you want to be able to make sure you can kind of, this is me narrating on top of you, but ride that wave. If that's a kick in the butt now, hopefully it maintains its influence over the course of the season and doesn't ever wane.
That's a great point. Yeah, and I think in a long season, it can be hard to maintain that that mental and physical drive. Like it's easy to get burnt out, especially for guys who are playing club after the Breeze season. That's really long. Having March to late October. There are ups and downs, dips. So I think, we should get you on the coaching staff, Greg, because it would be good to keep that in our memory at all times.
I would not cut it. Here's how I coach. Go do the thing. that's certainly interesting to hear. Let me ask you, you alluded already a little bit about kind of your role as a D-line guy. That's your self-identity, that's your, in the Breeze huddle identity, that's your veteran identity at this point. But I'll tell you, I looked at the points played in game one, and you split time pretty evenly. I think it was maybe 8 or 9 points playing on the D-line, and then 7 points over on the O-line. Do you think that represents a trend for the 2018 season? Do you see yourself crossing over more often?
I don't know if that's tough to say because I think last year, so we call that line when our offense gets broken, we always send out what we call the Doe line.
Which is a second offensive line.
Exactly. A second offensive line named after, John Doe, of course.
Of course.
and that line is, their job is just obviously to score and not get broken again. That lets the O-line kind of reset, talk to Daryl, and huddle up if they need. And it's really great for our team. I think, the O-line never, it's great because the O-line never takes offense to it. It's a system in place. So it's just like, oh yeah, we get broken, they go out, they do their thing, they score, we'll go back out there. The Doe line was really efficient last year. I think Daryl dropped a stat at some point at one of our practices. Maybe, I feel like 90, but maybe that's just because I was on the Doe line last year.
Well, there was a point last year it was 90, and that's, you just remember that
high
point.
Yeah, exactly, Yeah, but it felt really efficient. But when Daryl dropped that stat, it was like, oh man, it's nice to have that confirmation.
Oh, we are good.
We are good. Yeah, and I think the O-line has a lot of their systems, and it's what works for them. They are really efficient. They were last year, and I'm confident they will be again this year. And the D-line just kind of goes out and plays like classic vert stack ultimate. We don't try to run a ton of plays. I mean, we do some of the same offenses that the O-line does, but we just keep it really simple. And I think it helps, too, that we usually face the second D-line.
Sure.
Like the O-line has just gotten broken by the top guys on the other team.
They sub too, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. So we're usually facing the second line, so it's probably a little bit easier to score. But yeah, I think to answer your question, I don't see myself crossing over to the O-line, like to be on that first O-line. We have plenty of handlers that, you know, can get that job done. But you know, if Daryl decides he wants to switch out Nate Pryor to play defense, maybe I'll switch over, or, you know, someone else that is really shining on defense as a handler on the offensive line, then I could see maybe getting switched over. But I think for now, like, the roles are working for us, and, nothing has changed, from what I've heard. I'm expecting to continue to be the defense.
Yeah. So that's maybe a one game anomaly, or, I mean, certainly in that game, it was an interesting situation. That first half, there were quite a few. Montreal did a great job out there. They broke the O-line quite a few times.
Exactly, yeah. And that's probably why those numbers are even.
Yeah.
It's because we got broken a lot in that first quarter.
Got it. Well, that was my interesting statistical analysis. okay. Well, so another thing that is very Austin Bartenstein is, you know, you played the last couple of years of your life in Richmond. Your recent transplant to D.C., you kind of did you already mentioned, driving up and down a little bit between D.C. and Richmond, but now you're full-time D.C. Talk to me a little bit about the transition, and then, you know, from maybe the smaller pond ultimate to bigger D.C., but two communities that are still very much adjacent and have a little bit of a friendly rivalry and some guys that split time and familiarity with each other. And then talk to me a little bit about kind of becoming fully immersed in DC ultimate culture.
Okay, yeah. So the transition from playing, I guess, club in Richmond to playing club in Truck Stop was just basically a bigger role to a smaller role. Like on Floodwall, I was like the main guy in the handling core on offense.
Yeah.
And then on Truck Stop, I was back to defense and a handler. And I was part of a rookie class that was mostly much younger than me. So, you know, When you're a rookie on a team like that, it's kind of expected that, you know, you get a lot of layout Ds, or, you know, you present an athletic advantage. And I think my advantage was just like, not that I'm not athletic. You saw the cut of the week.
You're talking yourself into a hole here. Yeah.
But I think the difference was just I had to be good at defense again.
Yeah.
I wasn't good at defense in 2016 because I was so focused on being good at offense, and so I had to get creative with that because I'm not like blood good. I can't reach around and lay out over somebody like he can without touching them.
Yeah. yeah.
And I had to be good at like running the offense on the turn, which, you know, is my role in the Breeze as well. So I think that was a transition for me. Is just learning a lot of defensive best practices from Will and Nate Castine, and that definitely presented some growing pains.
Yeah.
But I think I became a much better defender at the end of the year, or by the end of the year, I was, you know, better at defense from 2017 back to 2016. The transition personally was great. I don't have to drive 2 hours anymore, which is awesome. I bike to practice.
Look at that.
And I live with my girlfriend now, who is a very accomplished player herself.
Sure, and she's attended her share of Breeze games as well.
Exactly.
Performing the national anthem, at least in two instances, if not more.
Yeah.
Molly Roy, of course.
Exactly, yeah. She's a Renaissance woman. but, yeah, so that transition personally was very... was just great for my life. I guess the teams, so I covered the teams, covered the personal thing. The communities are pretty different. I mean, I'm going to be a little biased towards Richmond right now because I know that's like, you know, that's home.
Yeah.
But it feels like everyone knows each other in Richmond.
Yeah.
And again, maybe that's because I'm new.
Everybody knows your name.
Exactly.
There you go. Yeah.
Yes. And that's exactly what it felt like when, like, my first pickup when I got back from
Taiwan.
That's
a moment in Hot Air history. It's the first time I think I've ever sang on
the
podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
It's the Molly Roy effect.
Yeah, there it is. I start talking about the national anthem, and here I am singing.
But when I got back from Taiwan in 2016, and I went to that first pickup, It did feel like that song was playing. Like,
yeah.
One of my best friends, Jameson and Morgan, were heckling me right off the bat. And like saying, like, I think I got like out-bided out of a cut or something like that. And they're like, oh, the Taiwan bod. there's a good
idea. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess Richmond kind of feels like that. Everyone kind of heckles each other. There's all kinds of characters in that community. Everyone knows you at a different pickup, or, you know, there's only one league per season. There's a spring league, there's a summer league. And it can just feel really, I guess, warm. But I'm sure I'll get that feeling, you know, in D.C. at some point. But
yeah.
It's just, you know, I've only been here for 3 months. So.
So all of the serious bits out of the way, there's two reoccurring segments on Hot Air that give us a chance to spice it up a little bit more. The first one is called That's My Dad.
That's My Dad!
And it's about heckling stories. And a guy from a tight-knit community like Richmond, a guy that has played at every level of Ultimate at this point in his career and has played in Asia as much as you have, I think you've got to have a good heckling story for me.
I think I got to go back to my roots. Mary Washington, I don't know if I can say her name on air. I'm going to try, and you can cut it out. The Grundlebugs was our team name.
That'll play.
Okay.
A grundle is just some sort of it's a piece of furniture.
It's a mythical creature.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the Grundle bug, but I think a grundle.
Oh, yeah. Grundle.
It's just it's just a very an antique piece of furniture.
Yeah, it's like a
lot of drawers and hinges.
An ottoman, essentially. Yeah. And a bug is just what you would find in there, in the burrows. So that's what we were called when I was in school. Thankfully, they're Mother of George now, because Mary Washington. That's the mother of George.
Oh, sure. Actually, I did not put two and two together until right then and there.
Yeah, there it is. So, yeah, we used to, whenever a new rookie would come in and they had the same name as a veteran, they would just be called something else. They wouldn't get a fancy nickname like a lot of Ultimate teams do. They would just be something else. Like, there was a younger Patrick, and the veteran was just like, nope, you're DJ. There was
just another bizarre
exactly name. Just a kind of a regular first name, like and the same was true for one of my good friends and one of my besties in DC, Dustin Liskey, who's been in the community for a long time.
Sure, I know Dustin.
He's gonna hate me for telling this story, but his nickname was Steven.
just a very typical name that could be Dustin.
Exactly. Yeah. And I don't know why this started, but any time Dustin would not succeed on the field, let's put it that way. And Dustin was a great player. Like, even in college, you know, he's an athletic guy. But, you know, everyone doinks a disc in college.
Yeah.
Everyone would just, on the sideline, would just say, Steven.
It's haunting.
Yeah. And I think it did kind of haunt him. I think that was maybe in his head a little bit. I don't know why he hated Steven, the name. I don't know if it was the name he hated or if he just hated that heckle. we heckled everyone. It wasn't just him. If anything, I got the worst of it. I don't know if that's a good heckling story or not, but I think...
I mean, if it was impactful, I think that's an amazing heckling story.
Hopefully that doesn't get around DC and he that doesn't haunt him again.
Yeah, now everyone knows his weakness. Sorry, Dustin. Well, great that you've survived with flying colors. That's My Dad. I'm going to bring on the next segment. It's called Over Under. And this one you may know. I do it more frequently. I'm going to give you a noun, a concept, something Ultimate related, something non-Ultimate related, and I want you to tell me whether you think it's over or underrated.
Okay.
If you overthink it like Alan Kolick did, you know, maybe we'll get inside each other's heads and no one will emerge unscathed.
Okay.
But if you just give me the visceral reaction,
okay.
I think we're going to be all right.
Is overthinking underrated or is it overrated?
You're already inside my head. I can't handle it. Reusable grocery bags, over underrated?
Oh, totally underrated.
You're a reusable bag
fiend. Oh, for
sure. Fiend.
I made it a New Year's resolution to never... get a plastic bag for anything.
That is impressive.
it's hard.
Does that mean you've got bags on you at all times?
No, I'm not a crazy bag person, but it does mean that, like, whenever I kind of last minute grocery shop, I always get too much when I grocery shop. I love food. I love cooking. And I just, like, I usually grocery shop hungry. Like, I didn't.
That's the key mistake.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I will always make that mistake. I don't know. I don't know what that says about me, but
especially if you're like on a bike or something.
Exactly. Yeah, which I usually am at DC at this point. So I've gotten to the point where I'll just carry my like my biggest backpack that's comfortable, just in case I'm going to go to the grocery store and just like pack a bunch of stuff in there. But yeah, I think plastic bags are highly overrated. Reusable bags, very underrated. I could talk about this for a long time. I'm going to go with straws are very overrated too.
I've actually been turning down some straws recently.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Breeze is going green.
Plastic in general. Breeze goes green.
Yeah.
One of our community partners this year is Plant a Tree.
Oh yeah, I heard about that.
I'm butchering the name, but it'll be in the post edit. I'll get the name correct.
Okay.
Over underrated superfoods. Sweet potatoes, blueberries, superfoods.
You talked to someone I know, didn't you?
I may have talked to somebody you know.
Superfoods are underrated. Well, oh man. That's a good question.
Because super is right in the name, meaning that they're getting rated pretty high.
Exactly. I'm going to go with overrated. So I think this is someone who has multiple books with the title containing superfoods in the title at some point.
Yeah.
I have a book just called Superfoods. I have a book like it's like recipes with superfoods or something like that.
Yeah.
I can't remember the titles, but they're like all about superfoods. And one of the books is actually really helpful. It's saying you don't need to go nuts with the superfood craze.
Unless nuts are a superfood.
Yeah, true.
Okay.
Carrots are a superfood. Like they're saying like this superfood craze is just like, you can get like cheap foods that are very good for you. And I think a superfood, I might not get the definition right, but it's something that has multiple nutrients that are really good for you.
Okay.
Rather than just
other good foods. So basically your thesis here, if I may, is that there are other good foods that haven't achieved super, and because they exist and they are just good foods, you could supplement superfoods with good foods, thus making superfoods singularly less important.
You nailed it. Yeah.
Whoa. That's a complex argument, but I'm on board.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not going to say don't eat superfoods. I eat a lot of them, and I probably spend too much money on them, but I think they're overrated.
Yeah, what's the most super of the superfoods for you?
Oh, man. I hope I don't sound pretentious here.
It's too late for that. Two dudes sitting here just talking about superfoods. Yeah. Too late.
Exactly.
Hot air at its finest.
This is so basic. I guess Hemp seeds.
Okay.
I will put those on a lot of things in my oatmeal and on my salads. They have so much good stuff in them. Hemp seeds are properly rated.
Hemp seed plug here from Hot Air.
Yeah, which is maybe like the hippiest superfood there is, right?
Yeah. good to go. Enough said. We're gonna go back to ultimate tack back, low release backhands, over underrated. Gotta have a good one.
Are we pivoting on these low release backhands?
I think I'll say for the sake of to give you a very specific throw to respond to, I'll say a no pivot low release backhand.
I think that's overrated. I think regular low release backhands are underrated.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you want to pivot out there? You want to get as much extension as you can?
Exactly. Yeah.
And you don't think enough people? You don't think that's used commonly enough?
No, man. Everyone's in love with the scuba right now.
Yeah, that's
the hot throw.
It's in vogue.
But it's definitely in vogue, and I admire the people who can do it really well in a lot of situations. And maybe I'm just jealous that I never practiced that throw when I was younger. So now when I practice it, I just look stupid. but I've never felt the need for an upside down. Well, hammers excluded. An upside down throw like a scuba in a game, and I think some of the great throwers don't throw a lot of scubas, and I think they're doing just fine. So
yeah.
I think underrated is the pivot low release backhand.
Okay, so step out and throw that low release backhand. Throw it well.
For sure. Yeah, I think that's the best throw you can learn as a new young player.
So we've talked a lot about Mary Washington. Let's talk about a new generation of Mary Washington that this weekend had the team qualify at conferences for the next level of play. He's also a fellow breezer. Over underrated, Joe Richards.
Oh, man. That's tough.
It's going to be tough. No one said it was going to be easy.
Yeah. I think Joe is overrated in the college division.
Really?
But underrated in the ADL.
Different ratings for different tier. Multifaceted Joe Richards.
Yeah. And I hope he doesn't get mad at me for this. Because I think Joe is awesome.
But he's getting a lot of hype in college right now.
He is getting a lot of hype. And, man, I'm going to say Joe is rated. I'm not going to say he's overrated.
I rarely allow the rating. Usually hold people on the fire. But, you know, for the way that you've already laid it out, I'm actually more inclined to accept this because you have laid out a portion of him and a portion of his playing that is over and underrated.
Yeah. So I think Joe can – I think with the right teaching, which he's getting from Daryl, and, like, I know Rowan has really worked with Joe – Joe is going to be a really good defender. And he already, you know, he played in Raleigh last year. He played in some other games where he made an impact. He was scoring. Sure. I think, like, Joe is not just a guy
And a guy that's still in college getting reps at the semi-pro level.
For sure.
Is noteworthy.
Yeah, yeah. Joe has great throws, and I think he's still learning how to use those. I think, like, a lot of guys who are really athletic like him try to, like, get good at throwing. And, yeah. Like, almost want to prove themselves as a thrower. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
They're like, you can't just, like, give me this cushion under, as they should. Like, they should get good at those throws. And Joe is good at those throws. I think he's just learning how to use them best. But, man, I mean, he has so much potential, and he's such a good guy. Like, I think he's gonna be really good, especially on the breeze. But yeah, to go back to college, I think he and Zach, I only say overrated for Joe because I think a lot of the Mary Wash team this year is really good. And Joe and Zach get a lot of attention, as they should, but, like, there's some other guys on that team that are really, you know, helping run the show.
Yeah, some depth out there.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Nice. All right. Last one. You'd mentioned bicycling back from a grocery store, but let's go with what's kind of trendy around DC for the last 2 or 3 years, or even maybe a little less than that, dockless bicycles. The ability to rent a bike, it doesn't have to go back to a dock, you can park it anywhere, in a tennis court, in a parking garage. How do you feel about the dockless bikes that have descended upon major urban areas?
I think because I didn't know about them before coming to DC, I think they're underrated.
Like, okay.
That is such a crazy convenience. Like, can you just pick it up anywhere too?
Yeah. Like, so I mean, use a smartphone to, like, find where they are.
Jeez.
But, like, there could be one watching you right now.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
They are everywhere.
Too. The dockless, like, bike is in the closet.
They. I mean, you will find those things anywhere too, and it's really funny to just see a random bike.
Yeah.
That isn't locked up, which is
playing doubles tennis. Yeah.
Yeah, so definitely underrated with that one. I hope my bike never fails me, but if it does,
you won't be stranded long.
Exactly. Yeah. You've got a friend in the dockless bike.
Well, great. That is over under. You've survived my questioning today. We talked a lot about the upcoming Breeze game against Ottawa. Come on out on the 22nd. It's a Saturday game. I think maybe our only Saturday game of the year. Or sorry, it's a Sunday game, and I think it's our only Sunday game of the year, which is exciting if you've got some kids at home or other folks that aren't going to stay out late on a Friday night, Saturday night. That said, I'm going to hand over a hot mic to you. Are there any other topics that you want to address on Hot Air? It's your big shot. What do you got for me, Austin?
I guess it was about 2 or 3 weeks ago. It was before Fool's Fest. You might have heard about the Crosswind Tour.
Vaguely.
Okay.
Tell me more.
Yeah, so Upwind is a... I guess it's a...
Breeze-themed.
Yeah, exactly right. is run by Laurel Aldershaw. I think I'm getting her last name right. She is incredible. She came to DC. She's going all across the country.
Yeah.
Kind of educating, or really just hosting forums on all forms of inequity.
Yeah.
The hot topic in Frisbee right now is gender equity.
Yeah.
But she, in which we focused on a lot when she came to DC, but we also focused on other forms of inequities in Ultimate, and kind of, she kind of, like, focused in on other things too. Like, on not just Ultimate, but how can we look at this from a broader scope too? Basically, I just want to say that if you get a chance, I don't know if the Crosswind Tour still going on, but if you get a chance to look into Upwind at all, it was a very educational night, inspiring night. I remember at the end of it, Molly came up to Laurel and Molly was just like, can you run for office someday? I mean, she is incredible. And just hosted a great discussion with a lot of involved DC Ultimate players.
Yeah.
I asked difficult questions, challenged people's perspectives. It was just a kind of a refreshing, very productive night, I think, for DC Ultimate.
Okay. So shout out for Upwind Ultimate and these ongoing open dialogues about equity and gender equity particularly. And hopefully here on Hot Air, I'll preface give you a little bit of a snippet into my future designs for some of the episodes in 2018. The Breeze have stood up an equity committee, and hopefully I'll be having some of the members, one or two or more of the members, on this podcast in the upcoming weeks. So great to hear about Upwind, and hopefully something the Breeze will be being conscious and thinking about and deliberate about going forward with the organization.
Sounds good.
Well, thanks again for sitting in the hot seat today, Austin. I enjoyed having you on Hot Air. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in, listening, downloading. Until next time, adios.
Thank you, Greg.